Hello, and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, board member for Pardes. This week, Rabbi Meir Schweiger discusses Torah portion Vayetzeh. Rabbi Schweiger is on the road this week, and we apologize that the sound quality is not to our usual standards. Rabbi Meir Schweiger is a senior faculty member of Pardes and serves as the Mashkiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
This week's parsha is Parshat Vayetzeh. We will be examining the personal family life of Yaakov. I want to apologize in advance for the quality of this week's podcast. I am not in Israel with my usual equipment. I am currently on tour, speaking in a number of places in the United States. Hopefully the message will get across in any event. Let us begin by examining the end of last week's parsha. After Yaakov deceives his brother, deceives his father, stealing the blessing from Esav, Esav is intent on killing Yaakov. And when Rivka learns of this desire of Esav, she devises a plan separate them. She comes to Yitzchak and says to Yitzchak, Yaakov needs to go and find a wife for himself. This is in chapter 27, verse 46, where she says to Yitzchak, I am disgusted with my life because of the daughters of Chet. If Yaakov will marry someone from the daughters of Chet, why should I stay alive? And then the next verses in chapter 28, verse 1, Yitzchak calls Yaakov and says to him, I do not want you to marry a Canaanite woman. Go to the land of Aram, to the house of Betuel, and take for yourself a wife from the daughters of Lavan, your mother's brother. And so we're told that Yitzchak sends Yaakov away to find for himself a wife. Note the parallel between the story of Yaakov and the story of Yitzchak. Both of them are to marry women from another land, not from the land of Canaan. Yet in the case of Yitzchak, Abraham does not yet send Yitzchak to find a wife. Abraham sends his loyal servant. Under no circumstances is Yitzchak to leave the land of Israel. And we spoke about this in previous podcasts, that Yitzchak is very much associated, the symbol of the Jew in the land of Israel. He is born, bred, and eventually dies there, never once leaving the land of Israel. But Yaakov is, in effect, the Galut Jew. The essence of Yaakov's life is shaped in the Galut, in the diaspora. Whether Yitzchak knows this in advance, or whether this is after the fact, Yaakov is sent directly to find a wife. Note also that Yitzchak gives him a very specific destination. Find a daughter of Lavan to be your wife. In the case of Avraham's servant, he is not given such specific directions. He is told to go to Avraham's land, to his birthplace. But he's not told specifically to go to his family. Let us now come to our parsha. The first encounter which Yaakov has with his bride-to-be is at a well, similar to what you find in the story of Eliezer, the servant of Avraham. But the similarity stops there. In fact, there seems to be a certain role reversal. In the story of Eliezer, of the servant of Abraham, he sets up a test to determine who will be the proper wife for Yitzchak. And the test is an examination of her quality of chesed. And as we know, Rivka goes above and beyond the wildest expectations of Eliezer. We also know that as soon as he sets up this test and he prays to God, immediately she appears on the scene. It is only after she passes the test that Eliezer finds out who she is, who her family is. And at that point, is confident that she is the woman. By Yaakov, as I said, there is a role reversal. When Yaakov is told, and this is in our parsha, chapter 28, verse 6, Yaakov is told, "Behold, there is Rachel, Lavan's daughter, who is now coming with the sheep." He immediately knows who this woman is. And interestingly enough, rather than Rachel giving Yaakov to drink and giving his sheep to drink, it is the exact opposite. We're told in verse 10, chapter 28, that when Yaakov saw Rachel, the daughter of Lavan, his mother's brother, and when he saw the sheep of Lavan, once again, his mother's brother, Yaakov comes near, and he removes the stone from the mouth of the well, and he gives the sheep to drink. It is not Rachel who gives to Yaakov, it is Yaakov who gives to Rachel. And it is important to note, the stone which he is lifting up is a stone that it takes a whole village to lift up. So that Yaakov somehow displays some supernatural strength in being able to lift up the stone to water the sheep. If we were to stop at this point, we could easily say that what empowers Yaakov is the contact he is now making with someone from his family. The fact that Yaakov feels very lonely and in fact is very much pushed away by the local shepherds and finally sees somebody from the family empowers him to do this supernatural feat. But one could also say, on the basis of the next pasuk, in verse 11 we're told, "Vayishak Yaakov l'Rachel," that Yaakov gives Rachel a kiss, and he lifts up his voice and he cries. This image is not exactly in keeping with our concept of the patriarchs. It is very interesting that when we look at Yitzchak, we never find any real expression of emotion. Even Avraham, when we think about the relationship between Avraham and Sarah, it is only when Sarah dies, after Avraham has eulogized her, that all of a sudden Avraham bursts out in tears. And Yaakov, the moment he sees Rachel, kisses her and immediately starts crying. The first thing which I would like to point out is that it is clear that Yaakov is someone who is very emotional. I don't know if I want to use the term touchy-feely, but someone who definitely, whose emotions we see. It is also striking that he should give Rachel a kiss, because we never find that type of expression by the other patriarchs. And the Ibn Ezra in his commentary, perhaps to tone it down a little bit, says that he gives her a kiss on the hand, which is an expression of courtesy, of politeness. But the simple way of taking it is that it is not just a kiss on the hand. And this sets the stage for what we find subsequently, because this sets in motion the process of the marriage of Yaakov and Rachel. And if we fast forward to verse 18, it says, "And Yaakov loved Rachel, and he says to Laban, 'I will work for you for 7 years for Rachel, your youngest daughter.'" Once again, let us compare Yaakov and Yitzchak. When Rivka is brought to Yitzchak, if you look at the end of chapter 24, verse 67, it says, "And Yitzchak brought her to the tent of his mother Sarah. He takes her to be his wife, and he loves her." Yitzchak loves his wife only after he takes her to be his wife, only after they are married. Yaakov is more of our sense of romantic love. He is in love with Rachel, love at first sight, the moment he sees her. He's in love with her, works for her. And in fact, when we look at verse 20, chapter 28, it says, "Yaakov works 7 years for Rachel, and the time seems to fly by. It seems to be as a few days because of his love for her." Yaakov is a different model. As soon as he sees Rachel, he is in love with her. One could even say passionately in love with her. He is prepared to work 7 years. Tremendous discipline to wait for her because of his tremendous love for her. And we can readily understand the tremendous sense of disappointment, frustration, anger when he is tricked by Laban and on his wedding night is given Leah instead of Rachel. I have always been troubled by the fact that Yaakov was not able to detect on his wedding night who he was really marrying. There is a rabbinic comment which says that Yaakov anticipated being deceived and created a code with Rachel to guarantee that this wouldn't happen. Yet Rachel, because of her love for her sister, because she did not want her to be humiliated, embarrassed, gave her sister the code, the sign, so that they were able to go through with the marriage. And although this is a very beautiful midrash, which speaks of the love of the sisters, the result is to create a relationship or series of relationships that are extremely complicated. And hence we find that on the one hand, when Yaakov discovers that he's married to the wrong woman, that Laban offers him to marry Rachel as well. And so he works an additional 7 years. And we're told in chapter 28, verse 30, that Yaakov comes unto Rachel, and he loves also Rachel more than Leah. And as I said, this sets the stage for a very complicated series of relationships. It is clear that the woman that Yaakov truly loves is Rachel. Leah is a wedge in the relationship. And although Rachel was willing to forego on her relationship, unwittingly, she creates this barrier. For a moment, I would like to perhaps draw a parallel between this story and the story of Abraham and Sarah. It is clear that they have a very, very close relationship, and yet Sarah is willing to introduce someone else to be a wedge in that relationship, Hagar, as a way of somehow becoming a mother. And it is clear that the relationship between Abraham and Hagar creates a very serious problem in the relationship between Abraham and Sarah, to the point where eventually Hagar is sent away, to the point where eventually the son of Hagar is sent away. And it is clear that there is no love between Sarah and Hagar. So that in this sense, Yaakov parallels Abraham. By having multiple wives, it creates a very complicated series of relationships. But there is a major difference between Yaakov and between Abraham. In the end, the wife of Abraham is Sarah. The child to continue the destiny of Abraham is Yitzchak, the son of Sarah. Abraham's relationship with Hagar is always a different quality relationship. Her child has a different path. Yaakov goes on to marry not only Rachel and Leah, but also their maidservants, Bilhah and Zilpah. But all four wives are considered to be the full wives of Yaakov. Their children all become the Jewish nation. And I would like to make this point now. We find a midrash that associates each of the patriarchs with a different image. Abraham is associated with the mountain, clearly a reference to Mount Moriah. Abraham's crowning achievement is the story of the Akedah, which shows his complete devotion to God. Yitzchak is associated with the field. And we have spoken about this in a number of podcasts. His crowning achievement is to work the land, to make it flourish, to have the land be the interface between the material and the spiritual, to reflect the divine presence through the day-to-day happening in the field. Yaakov is associated with a bayit, a home. On the one hand, one could speak of the bayit in the beginning of the parsha, Beit El. When Yaakov has his dreams and he wakes up, when he has his dream and he wakes up and he says, "How awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God." And we're told in chapter 28, verse 19, he called the place Beit El, the house of God. But it would seem to be, on a deeper level, Yaakov is connected with Bayit, because he establishes a Bayit. He is the only one of the patriarchs whose children, all of his children, eventually become the Jewish people. He's the only one of the patriarchs who has a significant number of children. 12, who form the 12 tribes, the basic building block of the Jewish nation. So that Yaakov's mission is to begin to establish the nation. As a result, perhaps it is divine providence that brings about a situation where he needs to marry four women, have 12 children, in order to accomplish that goal. And with all the difficulties that he has, which we begin to see in this week's parsha, and certainly in the coming Parshiyot, his success is that all of his children remain within the fold. I would like to examine another side of the coin, which I alluded to earlier. It is very clear that Yaakov loves Rachel much more than Leah. But when we read chapter 29, verse 31, it goes beyond that. It says, when God saw that Leah was hated, he opened up her womb, but Rachel was barren. Whether Yaakov hated Leah because she deceived him, because he did not really want to marry her, because by marrying her it complicated his life, or whether Yaakov simply does not love Leah as much as Rachel, it is clear that from Leah's perspective, she is an outcast. She is hated. And when we read the coming Psukim, it is clear that for her, having children is a way of somehow correcting her relationship with her husband. So that the first thing which she says in verse 32, she has a child, she calls him Reuven. And she says, because God has heard, God has seen my affliction, and now my man will love me. It is clear that she is interested in getting the love, the affection of Yaakov. And then she has another son. And she says, and God has heard that I am hated. And one could imagine the feeling she has, that after the first son, she expected that Yaakov would love her more. And when he doesn't, she perhaps feels the depths of his hatred. And she calls the second son Shimon. And then she has a third son. She calls him Levi. This time my man will accompany me, will escort me. Note that the fourth son that she has is Yehuda. And she says, this time I will thank God. It is interesting that the first three sons are named as a way of reflecting the nature of her relationship with Yaakov. And I would say that perhaps it is not so clear whether in the end Yaakov really loves her more because of the children that she is bringing him. It is certainly clear that after the first son, it didn't happen. But what's also interesting is that when we come to the fourth son, she says, I will thank God. And he's not connected with her relationship with Yaakov. Which means that somehow the fourth son is the one that she values in his own right. Perhaps, according to a Midrashic understanding, Leah had divine inspiration and knew that Yaakov was destined to have 12 sons. And according to the division, she should have only borne him 3. So that when she brings him a fourth son, she has gone beyond her quota, which is very empowering to her to know that she has now been given a certain central role to play in this family. Note the fact that when we get to chapter 30, verse 1, when Rachel sees that she is unable to have children, she is jealous of her sister. She becomes angry, frustrated. She gives Yaakov her maidservant as a way of being built up. And note the fact that when she has a child, she calls him Dan. When Bilhah has the child, she calls him Dan. God has judged me. God has listened to my voice. And then Bilhah has a second son. She calls him Naphtali. Naphtali is a reflection of the fact of her struggle with her sister, her triumph. Note how both in the case of Leah and Rachel, the children, are part of the struggle for the love of Yaakov. As we go on in the parsha, we read again and again of the tensions that exist. It is a very understandable thing that the Torah prohibited marrying two sisters. The Torah did not want to see sisters being put into the role of competing wives. And I won't even get into the question of how could Yaakov do that when later on it is prohibited. Let us just suffice to say that the Torah has not yet been given. But clearly, this has created a very unhealthy situation. And not only do I have the sisters in competition, but I then have the maidservants of each one who are brought into their battle, into their struggle. The flip side of this is that because of this competition, because of this struggle, there was an incentive, an impetus to create more and more children. And once again, I come back to what I said earlier. It is very interesting to see that somehow there is the fulfillment of the divine will over here to begin setting in motion the establishment of the Jewish people. Let me conclude by saying, in our parsha, we see a picture of Yaakov as a very, very real individual. Someone who we can perhaps relate to much more. A very emotional individual. Love at first sight. Love with a passion. The intrigues of the family. The rivalry. The sense of love and hate being mixed together. The difficulties of building a family with conflicting elements. And yet I want to conclude by saying, despite all the difficulties, despite all the tensions, somehow Yaakov succeeds in raising all these children to become the Jewish people. Yaakov succeeds in somehow maintaining the integrity of his family. In this way, Yaakov accomplishes something which neither Avraham and Yitzchak, nor Yitzchak, were able to achieve. Both Avraham and Yitzchak are extremely accomplished in the world at large. Avraham builds altars. Yitzchak digs wells. Avraham and Yitzchak both are engaged in negotiations with Avimelech, the king of Plishtim. Yaakov, from beginning to end, is very much focused on building a family. Building a family which ultimately will become the Jewish people. Each has its place. Each needs to complement the other. It is important for us to see that this was Yaakov's major accomplishment. And to also see that creating a family has many, many difficulties. In Yaakov's case, it was clearly exacerbated by the multiple wives that he had with all of the rivalry between them. It just magnifies the accomplishment that Yaakov had in being able to create the house of Yaakov, the children of Israel. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated. Please send your email via podcasts@pardesusa.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.